Hello, this is Janice Schweizer with the Pantograph for Tuesday, April 28th, 2026. We begin on the front page with McLean County, JL Garden, a place to grow. Courtyard lets residents and staff cultivate positivity and skills, by Caitlin Klepek. Residents at the McLean County Detention Facility are planting a courtyard garden this spring, serving as a space to provide outdoor activity, relaxation, and therapy sessions. This benefits, honestly, everybody, said Jackie Matias, director of the Recovery Education Support and Reentry Team for the jail. The staff comes out, our residents come out, we plant vegetables, flowers, and then once it grows, it goes back to our residents. On Earth Day last week, Matthias said cherry tomatoes and herbs are the most popular plants grown in the jail's garden, which residents are free to use to enhance the food provided at the facility. Although many of the residents and even staff members like Matthias had never gardened or even touched plants before the garden began 3 years ago, they have found they enjoy the nurturing aspect of the garden and the opportunity to learn new skills. The garden is maintained with commissary funds and donations, said Lieutenant Matt Proctor, Assistant Superintendent of the jail. Each summer, about $500 is used to get the garden up and growing, jail leadership said. The courtyard garden provides a calming environment that gives residents a sense of purpose and skills they can bring home to their families once they are released, residents told the Pantograph. One resident said gardening reminds him of home, noting his mother can often be found out tending to her garden. It's just something that isn't related to jail, he said. It's more involved in something more important than just sitting in the jail, and it makes me feel like I'm not here. Another resident, who said he struggles with mental health issues, finds the garden peaceful, and it helps to reduce his stress and anxiety. It's a good thing, the second resident said. McLean County Detention Center officials asked the Pantograph not to identify the residents who agreed to be interviewed. About half of the more than 200 total residents participate in tending to the garden. The residents work out in a rotation, which gives each interested resident the opportunity to get out to the garden about once a month. Since so many residents have signed up, the garden is expanding this year, and the detention center staff is working out ways to allow more residents to come out at once, Matthias said. In addition to growing vegetables, flowers, and herbs, the garden features calming elements like bubbles and a space for outdoor games and yoga mats. A third resident thanked Matthias for getting the garden started, saying he hopes to teach his children how to garden once he's released. It's another fun way for me to bond with them and spend more time, he said. He laughed, speaking about his daughters, who he said would love to garden with him. But his sons, on the other hand, would probably not be too interested. As the residents began playing with the bubbles, the third resident added that his sons would never play with bubbles. A fourth resident told the Pantograph he enjoys the garden because it helps to get his mind off of what is going on and it provides a fun activity. The first resident agreed, saying it's good to be a part of something positive, especially something that isn't mandatory that you can just volunteer to do. In addition to being used for planting, they also have used the space for baptisms, anger management classes, and sometimes just for a resident who's had a rough day. The jail is a high-stress environment, so coming out here is a lower stress, Matthias said. It brings it down. It gives the residents a little time to sort of decompress. Nicole Heitrek with Capital News Illinois writes, Illinois facing water woes. Sources still strained despite spring rains. Drought and hot temperatures have burdened Illinois since last summer, and despite rain improving conditions this spring, the long-term lack of precipitation and high temperatures have affected water supplies across the state. Sullivan, a small city southwest of Decatur, declared a water emergency in February that's expected to last until June. Bloomington recently ended its severe drought proclamation and eased restrictions on water use, but residents are encouraged to continue being judicious. The Illinois Department of Natural Resources has delayed opening Heideke Lake near Morris to boating because of low water levels. As local governments confront water challenges, regional droughts have called attention to lax or non-existent water management policies in Illinois. State lawmakers have caught on too, especially as they consider how to regulate data centers, a new type of high-end water user that's been spreading across the state. Trent Ford, the Illinois state climatologist, said water monitoring and management can be tricky. It's definitely a really, really complex thing with water systems in Illinois, Ford said. You know, there's always this overarching kind of perception of water abundance, in some cases overabundance, but that's definitely not the case. That's only a perception. It's a mirage of abundance. He said rain in 2026 has improved topsoil moisture, but months of drought mean the dryness has affected deeper layers of soil and water. Critical rivers like the Sangamon, Mackinac, Kankakee, Iroquois, and Mason, quote, are still way below where they normally are at this time of the year, close quote. Though he expects those levels to improve. Lawmakers in Springfield, meanwhile, are only in the early phases of considering statewide water use plans, mostly discussing the problem in non-voting subject matter hearings. The onset of data center development, however, has at least brought the conversations to the forefront. There are several agencies that touch on this, and then you've got local control that does things, State Senator Rachel Ventura, a Democrat from Joliet, said. You've got the multi-state and the multi-country water compact of the Great Lakes. So this is not just something that you can easily introduce and then be done. The goal, of course, is to make sure that our state is safeguarding water so people can have quality of life. Illinoisans rely on lakes, rivers, shallow groundwater, and deep groundwater, but measuring water supply can be difficult because it depends on the region of the state and the structure of the ground beneath the surface. Underneath our feet gets really complicated really fast, said Daniel Abrams, a principal research scientist at the Illinois Water Survey. Being able to understand that is critical, and we're looking at all kinds of ways to image and improve that. The Water Survey is not a government agency, but it works with the Illinois Department of Natural Resources to conduct research and monitor water supply by using wells that measure groundwater levels and data mapping tools that visualize Illinois' hydrology. The Water Survey also advises municipalities and counties about managing water. The Water Survey does important research, but the lack of state regulatory authority over water makes its task difficult. Abrams said water supply modeling is a crucial tool for water management, but it's not perfect, and he and his team are always looking for more data, particularly about water use. One of the data sources that right now we have is annual demand, he said. But the more we start thinking about drought, the more we start thinking about those peak demand conditions. Shallow aquifers and surface water sources are more susceptible to drought in the short term, but they rebound quickly after rain, Abrams said. The opposite is true of deep aquifers, like the Muhammad Aquifer in central Illinois, or the deep sandstone aquifer system in northern Illinois. That means drought and overuse have different effects depending on the location. More frequent reporting from municipalities, irrigators, and industries would give the Water Survey a better idea of how seasonal demand works and the condition of aquifer levels, he said. Getting information on a quarterly basis or a monthly basis would make our models more accurate and would help us better understand things like the impacts of drought to our water supply, said Jenna Shelton, director of the Illinois Water Survey. The Illinois Water Inventory Program collects reports about withdrawals, but it doesn't have a full picture of that demand because of missing data. Since 2010, the Water Use Act of 1983 requires annual water usage reports for, quote, all high-capacity wells or intakes pumping 70 gallons per minute or more, that's 100,000 gallons per day, close quote. Systems of wells and intakes that have a combined pumping rate of 70 gallons per minute or greater also fall under the requirement. Those high-capacity entities include public water suppliers, like municipalities, industrial commercial facilities, wildlife and recreation operations, and agriculture irrigators. Multiple sources told Capital News Illinois that enforcement of reporting requirements across the state is lax. We are not a government agency, you know. We cannot really enforce the industries, farmers, to report water use every year to us, said Jingjing Jason Zhang, a principal research scientist at the Water Survey, who leads state and regional water supply planning. We don't get 100% compliance. Water use reporting is key to understanding what the state will need in the future and how to plan for it, he said. Without that information, resource planning is more difficult. Nora Beck, an employee at the Chicago Metropolitan Agency for Planning, or CMAP, said the state needs to update its rules about who's in charge of water resources so the state can better manage them. Everything legislative has been sort of piecemeal over time, she said. CMAP does water supply planning for Northeast Illinois, where many supply issues exist because people outside of Chicago and its immediate suburbs rely on hard-to-replenish aquifers, where water levels have dropped dramatically. A 2018 report from the Water Survey, for example, projected Joliet would be unable to meet water demands by 2030 if it continued using the aquifer. So the city is in the process of moving to Lake Michigan as a source. Illinois has a limit for how much water it's allowed to draw from the lake because of the Great Lakes St. Lawrence River Basin Water Resources Compact, an agreement between 8 states and 2 Canadian provinces concerning water quality and withdrawals from the Great Lakes. That limit doesn't exist for groundwater, Beck said. Beck said approximately 80% of the people CMAP serves rely on Lake Michigan for water, but the rest rely on groundwater sources. We have a water budget, basically for the Lake Michigan property, she said. The remaining 20% are mostly on groundwater sources where there's not a clear budget. Any user can pump as much as they want. Ventura, the state senator from Joliet, has been involved in water policy since she worked as a naturalist for Georgia State Parks and Historic Sites. She said looking at each water region in Illinois separately and streamlining oversight authority would be smart approaches to management. Ventura also suggested the state should mimic the Great Lakes Water Compact to create water use agreements across Illinois. Having that regional study is still really important, Ventura said. And then looking at things like refilling aquifers or having a long-term plan for access to water, I think is important for everyone in our state. There's no single agency that manages water use in Illinois either, she said. The IDNR, IEPA, and the Illinois Department of Agriculture all manage water to different degrees and with different focuses. Of the 3 agencies, the IDNR shoulders the most responsibility for water supply and works with groups like CMAP, the State Water Plan Task Force, and the Water Survey to do regional planning and monitoring. But at a February hearing on groundwater, a representative from the IDNR said the agency faces serious staffing shortages that limit its ability to monitor usage and enforce reporting. Since 2024, CMAP has worked with IDNR, Illinois Indiana Sea Grant, and the Northwest Water Planning Alliance to develop a water sustainability plan for 5 counties in northern Illinois. Beck said a statewide version of that could be helpful. Beck has also discussed governance strategies with Freshwater Society, a Minnesota initiative to better manage drinking water. Minnesota is currently developing updated rules for groundwater governance. I don't think we need to copy directly from another state, Beck said. But I think it's important to note that these other states are recognizing that they need to upgrade their groundwater governance, and they're improving it in ways. Ventura has introduced or co-sponsored legislation to give the Illinois Department of Agriculture more authority over some withdrawals, and a bill to put more restrictions on private companies buying water from municipalities. But those measures have stalled. She also has a data center regulation bill that would require the facilities to file water use reports and monitor discharged water for pollutants, a provision that could become part of a broader data center regulatory bill. The Power Act, a widely debated data center regulatory bill, has several water-related provisions, including requirements for usage, efficiency, and water quality monitoring. We are looking at, you know, hundreds, thousands, millions of people who need access to water and what that looks like for the future as we move into things like data centers and other climate concerns, Ventura said. Here are a couple of notes about road work in the area. Fox Creek Road construction from west of Savannah Road to east of Bike Road could begin as early as May 7th, depending on weather and other factors. This new roadway will be two lanes in each direction with a bi-directional center turn lane. The project also includes replacing the existing bridge and installing traffic signals at the intersections of Fox Creek Road at Danbury Drive and at Bike Road. The city will also construct a 10-foot-wide multi-use trail north of the roadway connecting the existing trail east and west of project limits. We know construction brings short-term inconvenience, but this is a long-term investment in safety, connectivity, and quality of life, said Mayor Dan Brady in a news release. Projects like this are how we continue making Bloomington stronger and better prepared for the future. And pavement marking operations began on Monday for sections of Oakland Avenue, Prospect Road, and Washington Street. The work began on Oakland Avenue from El Dorado Road to Hershey Road and will move to Prospect Road from Oakland Avenue to Empire Street before finishing on Washington Street from Veterans Parkway to Hershey Road. Schedules may change because of weather or other factors. The intersections along these routes will be closed periodically during these operations to allow for proper installation. Motorists traveling through these intersections may experience delays and are advised to consider alternate routes. For a list of road closures on an interactive map, you can visit bloomingtonstreets.com. Next, Caitlin Klepek writes, Clinton woman found dead in car. State police treating case as homicide, husband in custody. The Illinois State Police and the Clinton Police Department are investigating a homicide after a 34-year-old woman was found dead in a car. According to a news release from the Clinton Police, officers were responded about 5:27 p.m. April 24th to a Clinton address for a welfare check. A subsequent investigation led the department to issue a missing and endangered person alert for Cassandra Ann Smith, 34, of Clinton. On Saturday, April 25th, Clinton police asked Illinois State Police to assist in the investigation, and they executed search warrants on multiple properties and vehicles. About 7:15 p.m., officers found Smith deceased in a vehicle located near Sunrise Court in Clinton. Preliminary findings indicate she died of multiple blunt injuries. Smith's husband, Nicholas L. Smith, 35, also of Clinton, has been taken into DeWitt County custody. He faces preliminary charges of obstructing justice, resisting a police officer, and concealment of a death. Additional charges are anticipated as the investigation continues, according to Clinton police. We are grateful for the support of our law enforcement partners and remain committed to pursuing justice in this matter, Chief Ben Lowers said in the news release. This tragic loss of life is a stark reminder that domestic violence is not a private matter. It is a serious and urgent public safety issue. If you or someone you know is experiencing domestic violence, please reach out. Help is available. The investigation into Smith's death is ongoing. No further details have been released. Clinton police said Illinois State Police is serving as the lead investigator in this case. On Tuesdays, Jerry Vogler, superintendent of the McLean County Veterans Assistance Commission, writes Veterans Corner. The U.S. Department of Veterans Affairs announced the availability of $7 million in grants for organizations that provide transportation services to rural veterans. Grant funding is available to veteran service organizations and state veteran service agencies that provide veteran transportation services to and from VA or VA-authorized healthcare appointments. The funds are made available through the Highly Rural Transportation Grants Program, which provides transportation programs in counties with fewer than 7 people per square mile. There is no cost to participate in the program for veterans who live in an area where this program is available. For more details about eligibility priorities and application requirements, visit va.gov/health/VTP/grant_applicants. The closing date for application is May 5th. VetTix is the largest veteran-focused nonprofit in the USA with over 2.6 million verified members. VetTix provides tickets to events which reduce stress, strengthen family bonds, build lifelong memories, and encourage service members and veterans to stay engaged with local communities and American life. VetTix provides tickets to all branches of currently serving military and veterans, including immediate family of troops killed in action. It secures tickets to sporting events, concerts, performing arts, educational, and facility activities across the nation. VetTixers sign up online. Their service is verified. They can then request tickets to events that interest them and pay a small delivery fee to receive their free tickets. Since 2008, VetTix has distributed over 36 million tickets, including 8 million so far in 2026. For more information and to sign up, you can visit vettix.org. A VA Center of Excellence for Suicide Prevention study revealed 61% of veterans with a documented suicide attempt in the 2 years before military separation received continuing health care from Veterans Affairs after separating, with 90% of those using VA's mental health services. The results highlight the impact of military transition programs for this high-risk group. More than 1 million service members who separated from active duty between 2015 and 2020 with a suicide attempt in their record were nearly twice as likely to initiate VA healthcare and more likely to access VA healthcare sooner than other veterans. This success is certainly noteworthy in reaching veterans with a high risk of suicide. But the researchers noted there is still much work to be done. VA's number one goal is to reduce suicides among active duty military and veterans. VA researchers have identified a potential target to protect against brain injury immediately following a stroke. Research using a mouse model found immune cells rapidly invade the brain after a stroke, and a protein derived from these immune cells exacerbates the stroke injury. Applying a compound that inhibited the protein reduced the spread of cell death, eased neuroinflammation, and improved long-term neurological outcomes. The result of the research suggests administering drugs targeting the protein immediately after a stroke could be a promising treatment to prevent further brain injury. For more information and the medical names for the immune cells and the protein involved in the exacerbation of the stroke injury, you can browse Journal of Clinical Investigation. And our quote of the day is from Friedrich Nietzsche. There will always be rocks in the road ahead of us. They will be stumbling blocks or stepping stones. It all depends on how you use them. From USA Today Network, Chad Livingood writes, gas station heroin. Some states move to ban the sale of herbal substance, kratom. Michigan lawmakers are debating a ban on the sale of kratom products in the state, citing cases of addiction and instances of death from people consuming the herbal supplement known as gas station heroin. Here's what to know about this unregulated herbal substance commonly sold in convenience stores, gas stations, and tobacco shops. Kratom is a tropical tree native to Southeast Asia whose leaves contain compounds that can produce stimulant effects at low doses and opioid-like effects at higher doses. It is manufactured and sold in different forms: liquid tonics, tablets, gummies, powders, and capsules. It is marketed as an herbal supplement for energy, mood, and pain relief or opioid withdrawal, though the U.S. Food and Drug Administration has not approved those uses. Some kratom users take it to get off heroin or fentanyl, according to University of Michigan researchers. It's pronounced kratom. It's pronounced kratom. 7-OH is an alkaloid found in kratom leaves. It's manufactured in a synthetic form to produce an opioid-like sensation of pain relief, or sedation. It is more potent than pure leaf kratom and sometimes is referred to as the hard liquor version of kratom. If pure leaf kratom were considered beer, which is typically has a much lower percentage of alcohol by volume compared with a distilled liquor. Kratom users, substance abuse counselors, and doctors report symptoms of dependence and withdrawal from the substance, particularly when users exceed the recommended serving size. A Drug Enforcement Agency warned that kratom has sedative effects that can lead to addiction. On July 29th, the U.S. Food and Drug Administration moved to declare certain 7-OH synthetic kratom products a Schedule 1 controlled substance, the same class of drugs as heroin, ecstasy, and peyote. As of April 20th, the substance had not yet been formally added to the list of Schedule 1 drugs, which would effectively ban 7-OH nationwide. The FDA has warned that kratom use can lead to liver toxicity, seizures, or substance use disorder. Withdrawal from the substance can lead to increased anxiety, insomnia, and psychiatric episodes, according to University of Michigan researchers. Dr. Eliza Hutchinson, family physician who is a clinical instructor, said her substance abuse patients describe withdrawal from kratom as, quote, the worst influenza of your life times 10, unquote. The FDA said kratom is not appropriate for use as a dietary supplement and unsafe as an additive to food. The powder and liquid forms of kratom are sometimes marketed as an additive to shakes and smoothies. It will show up on a drug test if it's part of a specialized screening of narcotics and other substances that look for active ingredients in the kratom products. Retailers set their own rules, and some stores won't sell to anyone under the age of 21. Some of the 7-OH kratom products on the shelves of stores are actually labeled 21+. Alabama, Arkansas, Indiana, Rhode Island, Vermont, and Wisconsin have outright bans on the sale of kratom. In December, Ohio's Board of Pharmacy used the state's controlled substance law to ban the retail sale, distribution, and possession of 7-OH and other synthetic forms of it, board spokesman Cameron McNamee said. The Ohio Board of Pharmacy has a separate proposal to ban natural kratom products that remains in the rulemaking process. Some cities and counties across the country have imposed varying local sales bans, including Anaheim, California, Spokane, Washington, and the New York City suburbs of Nassau County on Long Island, according to published reports.